Merci Philippe. Je suis très content d'être ici. Et comme vous dites, évidemment, il se passe quelque chose en Europe. Mais quoi exactement? C'est ça la question? And I can perhaps contribute something to an answer to that question. I have just come this morning from Athens, where I have for the last several days the high privilege of working with the government of Greece, and especially with the finance minister, my very good friend, Yanis Varoufakis. I've had actually two occasions so far to observe the drama that's unfolding in Europe from a, let's say, a close vantage point. The first one was during the week that led to the week of the negotiations and other discussions in Brussels that led to the agreement, a landmark agreement on February 20th, and then these last few days in Athens, which had their own drama as they led up to a series of payments, including a very substantial one today, that were due to the International Monetary Fund, all of which had, let's say, events followed with distinct interest around the world and especially in financial circles. But what is at stake in Greece goes very far beyond merely financial questions. It goes beyond the question of the fate of a small and historically very badly governed country with weak institutions that has suffered abominably in the wake of the crisis over the last 5 years, losing 25% or so of its output, having unemployment rates that are comparable to those in the United States during the worst period of the Great Depression, unemployment rates that exceed 50, well over 50% for the youthful population, and facing a severe stresses in every aspect of public and social functions. It goes, as I say, even beyond that very grave situation, which is visible on every street in Athens, on every wall in Athens. It goes beyond that to the future of Europe, and beyond that to the meaning of the word democracy in our time. Because what the Greeks have done, and this is, I think, I have to say, what has attracted me to become as engaged as I could be in this situation, what they have done in the past few months is astounding. They have dismantled, and I think definitively, I could be wrong about that, but I think definitively, and banished an entire previous political class. They have ended a rather rotten and corrupt previous two-party duopoly, and they have installed a government of dissidents, activists, and professors, including, of course, the finance minister, who was for years, until very recently, banned and blacklisted from Greek television by the then existing authorities. That man is now the finance minister of the Hellenic Republic. And the Greek people did this, by the way, in the face of a wall of resistance from their own media, which continues, and in the face of a wall of incredulity from their European partners, which also continues. I would say that possibly nothing quite comparable like this has happened in Europe since the election of Solidarity in Poland at the end of the 1980s. And it is obvious that it has had a galvanizing effect on the political atmosphere outside of Greece, and in fact, in many places around Europe, spreading an aspect of possibility that was not there before, opening up a window of opportunity, as you said, from Tina to Tapas, very well chosen. I believe the word in Spanish for the atmosphere that is emerging is Podemos. And that is a breeze which is wafting over fresh air over the entire European scene. I've been, of course, watching the European scene with some care for the last 5 years, especially, and the transformation, the psychological transformation, is already perceptible outside of Greece. Inside of Greece, it is a fundamental fact that one can observe at any time. At the same time, it is also true that the new government confronts an elaborate, well-laid political and economic trap. It's more than a trap, actually. It's more like a minefield or an obstacle course that is entirely of human construction. It's purely artificial. It is comprised of deadlines, deadlines for reviews, deadlines for payments, payment schedules, cash flow hurdles that were put in place before the January 25th election, in some cases with a view toward the likely timing of that event. And it is comprised also of caps on liquidity assistance to the banking system, on issuance of T-bills by the government, the inability to discount T-bills at the European Central Bank, which came into play after the election. Each of those measures can, of course, be and has been rationalized as a measure of, let's say, supervision or oversight or precaution. We can argue about whether that's a legitimate rationalization or not. I would have my doubts. But what one can say for sure is that the ensemble of these obstacles and, let's say, precautionary financial measures is, from a macroeconomic standpoint, from a psychological standpoint, it is counterproductive, fundamentally counterproductive. It adds materially to the instability that is perceived with respect to the Greek economy, to the instability of the financial system. It adds materially to the capital flight, which has been going on, and to the political pressures that have been on the government, and to which neither the government nor the Greek public has shown any inclination to bow. To get past the trap, to get through the minefield, has required maneuvers of a fairly high order of adroitness, in at least, I think, three stages. The first was to establish in principle that the previous agreement, the Memorandum of Understanding, as it was called, which had subjected Greece to a form of colonial governance, according to which practically everything that the government did was dictated from outside, and legislation written in English and translated into Greek before it could be submitted to the parliament, that this government, by the institutions known as the Troika, was a thing of the past, that it was finished, that the Greek public had rejected being ruled this way in an open and decisive election. And at least in principle, that proposition was accepted, was agreed to, after some fairly rancorous negotiations that led to the communique on the 20th of February. A major step forward, although one that did come at a cost of deferring certain measures in the Syriza election platform, including the rise in the minimum wage, not reversing privatizations that had previously occurred, and limiting or accepting a primary surplus target, which although lower than the one, completely unrealistic one that had been previously in effect, was still and is still constraining on the Greek government. The second stage, still ongoing, involves establishing this reality at the operational level, establishing a professional, acceptable working relationship between the international teams, which do have a legitimate role. And that role is finding out the facts and assuring the European partners of the good faith of the Greek government, and the government in Athens. And that has required an adjustment on the part of the international teams, who came back to Athens, I think still hoping that they could conduct business as they had done before, basically under the same operational rules that had governed under the memorandum of understanding. They found out that that was not the case, and there was a certain amount of friction that was associated with that discovery. I think it's fair to report in the last several days some progress has been made. Technical discussions were suspended for a while, with the proposition being that the teams would present in writing their requests for documents from the Greek governments, and the teams are now doing that. They are working to present, either perhaps as early as today, a list of documentation that they require, and that request will be responded to. And the Ministry of Finance in Greece this morning issued a statement saying that they viewed this as a constructive development, as putting the relationship between the two sides on a proper footing of good order and regular exchange of documents. A third stage in the process that has to be pursued here is one which has to be resolved at the political level, and that involves restoring the liquidity of the Greek government and enough financial stability to the banking system so that economic activity can begin to resume. That's been a major problem, especially in these last 2 months, in the atmosphere of fear that surrounded the election and the atmosphere of uncertainty that has succeeded it. Basically, banks have been suspended most of their activity, and a great deal of capital has left, requiring, as I say, these intermittent and rather small increases in liquidity assistance to keep the system in function. But that is not sufficient to allow the government the breathing space either to develop its program of reforms or to begin to open up the prospect of some recovery in the economy. And a decision to move past that mechanism of destabilization had to be taken at the political level. And it is possible that that has been accomplished, in part, at least, last night. And here, I think, as was the case before the February 20th agreement, the pragmatic intervention of someone whom I don't offer, for whom I don't ordinarily offer a great deal of effusive praise, but namely the Chancellor of the Federal Republic of Germany, has to be acknowledged. It's a pragmatic step, which may well amount to a turning of the corner and an easing of the pressures that have been extremely problematic in recent days from the European Central Bank. So as these maneuvers, as I've called them, mature, there emerges an interesting possibility, and that is the possibility of a politically stable, anti-austerity government in Europe, led, as I think you probably have observed, by forceful personalities, and presiding over an economy which is so far down that it has no place to go but up. And that may well be, within a short period of time, on a track of some recovery, some improvement in job performance, and stabilization of its external debt situation. This would be in the wake of a crisis that was brought on by the neoliberal financial policies of the early part of the 2000s, and then aggravated and prolonged by the austerian ideology that succeeded the crisis, by the profoundly counterproductive policies with which Europe has reacted to the crisis. And so the possibility that an anti-austerity government might lead the beginning of a recovery from the austerity regime is a, I think, present reality. And it is, of course, a nightmare in certain quarters. It is, of course, the worst thing that could happen if you happen to be associated with the larger political system and the larger economic policy that Europe has been pursuing. And there are a lot of people who are associated with that ideology and with those policies. And you can see their reaction in recent days. They have thrown down one last line of mines and barriers, which has been visible to everybody and think deserves a word, even though it is not, strictly speaking, a word about economic policy. That is a campaign of political character assassination, which has been aimed specifically at one pillar of the potentially forthcoming Greek revival, and that is my friend, the finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis. This part of the game is a familiar one, particularly, certainly familiar to Americans. Americans of my generation have seen versions of it aimed at progressive or ostensibly progressive political figures on various occasions. Gary Hart was an example in the late 1980s. Bill Clinton was an example on several occasions in the 1990s. And there have been attempts of the same sort aimed at our incumbent president, Barack Obama. There are always two major features to a successful attack of this kind. One of them is the principle, that great principle, that freedom of the press is a concept that applies most particularly to those who happen to own one, which in this case are the rightists who own banks, who own media companies. And the second essential element is the altogether reliable response, especially in large audiences, when references are made in public to the fact that the human male is normally endowed with a reproductive organ. Did I state that with sufficient delicacy? Get away with it here. Of course, in the case of my friend Gary Hart and of President Clinton, there were issues here, which, if you happen to care about those things, could be raised. In the case of President Obama, we have a man whose visible family life is more pristine than any since Ozzie and Harriet. I'm glad someone laughed at that. It's just at least a little bit of affiliation with American popular culture in the 1950s. But in his case, that second essential element was therefore wholly absent, which is why President Obama was not taken down by this kind of attack. And in the case of Yanis Varoufakis, the attackers have essentially the same problem. The real life affords no plausible foothold, or is it handhold, or is it perhaps fingerhold? And so the whole thing had to rest on a fleeting gesture in a long-ago quasi-academic lecture. The phrase for this is scraping the bottom of the barrel. But it is something which has been part of the political and media dynamic for the last several days, affecting and aimed in a very specific way at the one figure who has done the most to transform the political climate of economic policy discussion in the world, and especially in Europe, in the last 4 months. Right? and whose position in doing that was built upon a record of years of millions of words of effective and largely accurate analysis of what has been going on. So we need to watch and be careful not to make too little of these matters, which may seem trivial and may be easy to dismiss, but which are in fact intended to achieve a very specific political purpose. This, I think, will pass. It will pass because the other leader of the Greek government, the Prime Minister, Alexis Tsipras, is the real thing. I've gotten to know him not as well as I know Yiannis, but I have to say I've met a lot of political leaders in my time, and I have not known very many who approach Alexis in his ability to assess a political situation with a very cool eye and to make a very solid judgment about it, which is why he came from nowhere after, in less than, say, 4 years, really in less than a year and a half, to be the prime minister now of a European country. The Greek people, after all, elected their government in complete defiance of their own media, and they have rallied behind it in the crisis that followed the election by margins that reached 80%, which meant that half or so of those who voted against them in the election have come to support them, at least at some point in the period that follows. There is a spirit of dignity in Athens that is worth a great deal more than money, and something very profound to observe. I've only observed it on maybe two or three occasions in a lifetime. And that is a spirit which is contagious, and it may be felt in Spain, and it may be felt in Portugal, and it may be felt in Ireland and elsewhere before long. So I hope you will not find me too portentous if I convey to you just how much this particular moment and the chance to participate in it has meant to me, by closing with the words of Zola: "La vérité est en marche, rien ne l'arrêtera." Yes.
Thank you, James, for I think also this sense of feeling of optimism about the future, but we will return to that in the question. So.